Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier. It's Friday, May 14th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. We may have a few afternoon showers today, winds from the south between 8 and 16 miles per hour, and a high today of 64 degrees. Tonight we'll go down to 49 degrees, and we can expect an evening shower with cloudy skies following. Winds will be south-southeast from 7 to 14 miles per hour. As we look around the region, breezy this morning, otherwise mostly cloudy, with a couple of showers this afternoon. A shower during the evening, otherwise plenty of clouds tonight. A couple of showers tomorrow and Sunday. The next phase of the moon will be May 19th, when it will be in its first quarter. The sun rose today at 5:49 a.m., and it sets tonight at 8:24 p.m. We have three stories on the front page today. And they include, Juan won't be seeking re-election to council, pressure creates a diamond, and we begin with, somber service honors fallen Waterloo officers. The story has been filed by Jeff Reinitz, and it begins with a photograph of an officer placing a flower on a memorial. And the caption says, a Cedar Falls police officer lays a flower on a memorial during the roll call of the fallen Thursday at Blackhawk County Peace Officer Memorial Service at the Waterloo Veterans Memorial Hall. Waterloo. 4 decades ago, officers Wayne Rice and Michael Hong lost their lives while on patrol in Waterloo. On Thursday, they were honored with special commendations by the Waterloo Police Department. Quote, we thought it was appropriate, given that this is the 40-year anniversary of our loss as a policing family, to honor the families, to present them with something that's long overdue, said Waterloo Police Chief Joel Fitzgerald. Quote, we need these cathartic moments to reflect upon tremendous amount of sacrifice people are making and doing so in the shadows, unquote. The Police Cross Medal is new for the Waterloo Police Department and is given to the families of officers who lost their lives as a result of honorable and duty-related service. Hong and Rice are the first to receive the honor, officials said. Relatives of the two accepted medals during the annual Police Officers' Memorial Day ceremonies outside Veterans Memorial Hall, an event honoring local officers who died in the line of duty. Thursday's sullen ceremony took on additional meaning, coming out after a year that saw the profession come under criticism nationwide following the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police. The occasion was reflected in the keynote speaker Jim Miller's Get Back Out There speech. Quote, I know many of you out there know the struggle and pain and the dark days of dealing with the loss of a loved one, but let's remember to enjoy and embrace the positive memories and the impact made from the lives of those we are here to honor today, said Miller, a wrestling coach and director of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and Dan Gable Museum. Blackhawk County Sheriff Tony Thompson said the annual ceremony is a remembrance of the ultimate sacrifice made. Quote, in today's hypercritical, media-sensitive, quick-to-judge world that our officers are asked to operate in, I think it's important for us to think about the challenge that our fallen brothers and sisters have left behind, Thompson said. While we're still focused on the sacrifices they made, it's on their shoulders that today your profession proudly stands. Pressure creates a diamond. Hawkeye Community College degree will allow student to work less and be more present for family. The story is filed by Andrew Wind, and begins with a photograph of Diamond de Rosser, Waterloo. Between classes, homework, and jobs, college can be a difficult balancing act. That's what Diamond de Rosser found after enrolling in Hawkeye Community College 2-year medical assistant program. She was working 2 jobs, about 80 hours per week, while completing the prerequisite courses ahead of the program's clinical component. De Rossiers was just starting that 2nd year last fall, and then at the end of August, DHS gave me my 2 younger brothers. the Iowa Department of Human Services approached the 26-year-old about becoming the legal guardian of her half-brothers, who are now 12 and 14 years old. Quote, "There was just some issues going on with them and their dad," she said. "DeRoshiers was asked by DHS to take them or we'll find a place for them," she said. "So I took them." Quote, "It's definitely been tough," the Waterloo native admitted. "According to my Apple Watch, I average about 4 hours of sleep per day." But the new responsibility didn't get in the way of finishing her degree. DeRoshiers will be one of 280 Hawkeye graduates participating in commencement ceremonies on Saturday. They are among 860 students at the college who finished degrees or programs this year. The medical assistant degree will allow her to work in a medical facility, administrative, clinical, or lab settings. Instructors at Hawkeye encourage students to take a test to become certified medical assistants in the next 6 months, something she plans on doing to further her career options. She called the just-completed training roughly equivalent to a licensed practical nurse, but a medical assistant can't do tasks related to intravenous therapy. She can now let go of the overnight shift 5 days per week at a gas station convenience store and the weekend technician position at a pharmacy. With just one job, she'll have more time to care for her brothers. This wasn't the first time DHS asked DeRoshiers to serve as a guardian for younger family members, including her two youngest brothers. In 2016, she was close to finishing a bachelor's degree in psychology at the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls. However, the 22-year-old wasn't able to complete all of her assignments after being asked by the state agency to care for all six of her younger brothers, something she did for 8 months. They had been living either with their dad or grandmother, but at that point, she said neither household was deemed emotionally fit for the boys. Along with getting the boys to school each day, she was involved in court hearings over her guardianship. That was later reversed, and the children returned to their dad until she was awarded permanent custody of the two youngest. She said the four other boys are living with their grandmother. The two boys living with her are doing better in school now than they previously had been. She said they are looking to the future, including colleges they'd like to attend and the careers they hope to have. Quote, "I'm happy they're actually able to be kids and things are getting better," said DeRoshiers. While attending UNI, she had a series of jobs at shelters for homeless people and abused women and a residential facility for children. She expected to seek employment in the social work field after graduation, but began rethinking that after leaving the university so she could be more involved with her brothers' lives. Quote, "With social work, I didn't really have a work-life balance," she noted, which often meant taking work home with her. Quote, "For me, that just meant there was a lot of off-the-clock casework," unquote. She wanted to find a career that would, quote, "allow me to be more present to the boys." That led DeRoshiers to consider medical programs at Hawkeye, but she still plans on tying up loose ends at the university. Quote, "I kept the teachers up to date on what was going on," she noted, after the new responsibilities pulled her away from classwork. This summer, she plans to finish the series of uncompleted assignments that will allow her to receive the degree in psychology. Waterloo Councilwoman Sharon Wan will not run for another term due to health concerns, story filed by Sydney Sison, and begins with a photograph of Sharon Wan. Waterloo. Waterloo Councilwoman Sharon Wan will not run for another term in November, according to a Thursday statement. Wan, who was elected in 2017, said she will not campaign again for health reasons. She said she feels Waterloo is on the brink of achieving great things, but said she does not have the energy that Waterloo citizens deserve to maintain a front row seat, according to her written statement. Quote, "While I might not be in the council to see some of these goals fully implemented, I will be in the background helping push them forward," Wan wrote in her statement. She said she made her announcement early to give interested residents enough time to organize their candidacies. Wan beat incumbent Councilman Tom Lind for an at-large seat. Her victory was a landslide, 4,814 votes to Lynn's 2,188, and came after she challenged Lynn on his stance about downtown development projects. Juan also championed more civility at City Hall. The councilwoman serves as mayor pro tempore, filling in for Mayor Quentin Hart if he was absent. She recently served as a non-voting member on the rebranding committee, working to replace the Waterloo Police Department logo. She moved to Waterloo more than four decades ago with her late husband, Dave, and they raised twin daughters. Juan currently lives in the Audubon Park neighborhood, according to the city website. She has two granddaughters. When Juan first ran for city council, she drew from 25 years as executive director of the Iowa Northland Regional Council of Governments, a volunteer group that allowed her to bring together local, state, and federal officials on major projects. She also held executive roles at Waterloo Downtown Council and Waterloo Chamber of Commerce, according to the city website. She chaired the National Association Development Organizations and the Iowa State University Alumni Association. She served on Iowa State University's Board of Governors. Juan chaired the Cedar Valley United Way Board and its annual campaign, served as an original member on the Blackhawk County Gaming Association Board and the State Vision Iowa Board, co-founded and chaired the Leadership Investment for Tomorrow program, chaired the My Waterloo Days Festival multiple times, and chaired the Exceptional Persons Incorporated Board. She has received a variety of service awards, including from the Waterloo Chamber of Commerce, Leadership Iowa, Junior Achievement, and Iowa State University, the city website says. Juan did not immediately respond to a request for comment on Thursday. Let's turn the page to the Cedar Valley section. Vaccine clinic for children ages 12 to 15 planned in Waterloo. Story by Sydney Sizon. Waterloo. Children 12 to 15 were recently cleared to get the Pfizer vaccine. Now the Blackhawk County Health Department is hosting a weekend vaccine clinic at the National Cattle Congress, according to a news release. The clinic will accept walk-ins from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday and Sunday at the Hippodrome. People who get vaccinated will provide their contact information and signed consent forms, but they do not have to provide identification or insurance information. The Pfizer vaccine recently received emergency authorization from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and recommendation from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for children 12 to 15 years of age. The health department called Pfizer's expansion to adolescents a way to further control the spread of a coronavirus in the county. It emphasized that study findings show the vaccine is extremely safe among children 12 to 15 years. The release said unvaccinated children are still capable of spreading the disease to others that are at higher risk of infection. This announcement is coming at an exciting time as summer is on our doorstep and our communities are becoming more active, the release said. Nafisa Sissy Eboigne, County Health Department Director, said being vaccinated prevents people from worrying about gathering for activities. Quote, we want everyone to enjoy their celebrations, graduation parties, vacations, and gatherings with friends and family this summer, Eboigne said. UNI's Nook hears concerns from Black community. The story filed by Andrew Wind and begins with a photograph of the President Mark Nook. Waterloo. President Mark Nook came to a forum Thursday prepared to talk about the University of Northern Iowa's efforts to invest in the success of communities of color across the Cedar Valley. He was armed with statistics about how overall number of minority faculty and staff have grown in recent years as the corresponding white employees declined. He presented comparisons of minority student performance at UNI and similar institutions. He talked about equity and admitted, quote, we know we're not there, unquote. But the mostly Black crowd at Jubilee United Methodist Church, many with ties to the university, wanted something more from Nook. Robert Welch, who left UNI in 2020 after about 2 years there, accused him of being presidential in his answers to people's questions. He asked to have some genuine, candid conversation about why you really think black people are leaving you and I. Quote, "What we want to hear from you is some truth," said Welch, who is executive director of the Tri-County Child and Family Development Council. "We want to hear we're screwing up and we don't support black people, and you don't." Nook had tried to make the case that the university was striving to change that. Quote, "I really am hopeful with what's happening with the president's advisory board," he said in response to an earlier question. "The diverse group focusing on inclusion and social justice has been active for a year and sets its own direction while looking at areas like budget, curriculum, and staffing." Quote, "What we really need to do is change the culture," Nook added. "We've got to change the culture from the ground up, and it's going to take time," unquote. He also noted the committee that recently led the search for a new provost included 50% racial minorities in an effort to bring greater diversity to the process. Nook said it is important to talk with employees, including racial minorities, about their experience when they leave the university. Quote, "We do hear often that climate is an issue, that they don't feel supported," he said. Still, Nook said UNI is making progress at recruiting and retaining students and staff of color. Quote, "We're growing the percentage. It's increasing. It's not increasing fast enough," unquote. Lori Dale, who works at UNI's Center for Urban Education, said there is a specific role in this for Nook and his white male advisors who were in the room. Quote, "My question to you all, as a white man, what are you willing to learn to create a safe space?" unquote, she asked. "My point is, it's not a safe enough space for people to speak their truth," unquote. Robert Smith, UNIQ's executive director, emphasized that partnering with the Waterloo community is key for Cedar Falls University in achieving diversity, equity, and inclusion. Quote, "We've got to get it right, and then we've got to hold the university responsible," he said. Jamie Butler Tadozi, executive director of the Center for Multicultural Education and a member of the advisory group, Nook mentioned, said there is plenty to be addressed at UNI. Quote, "We have issues with individuals and departments on campus," she said. "We do not have a systemic way of addressing diversity, equity, and inclusion," unquote. Chidozi expressed hope that the advisory group's work would spur development of a plan to do that. Cedar Falls Racial Equity Task Force finds way forward. Quote, "This is going to look different." Cedar Falls Racial Equity Task Force Finding Way Forward, story filed by Amy Rivers, and begins with a photograph of Felicia Smith Knowles at Cedar Falls. Cedar Falls. The new Cedar Falls Racial Equity Task Force started identifying areas members want to tackle at its meeting Wednesday. Quote, "By this fall deadline, I would hope we would have things we can take into our city goal-setting meetings," said Commissioner Kelly Dunn, who is also an at-large city council member. "That includes policy and things the city can support." Commission Chair Frank Dara, also a council member, said that is only part of what he considers the group's charge, pointing to broader, more insidious factors when it comes to racism in the city. Quote, "There are obviously bigger issues, more historic issues, within our community that need to be addressed," Dara said, referring to experiences Commissioner Felicia Smith Knowles shared at the last meeting. Quote, "How can we raise the community's consciousness about these things?" unquote. Smith Knowles said commissioners should look less at high-stakes measurables that task forces normally consider. She said work to take down racist systems would be ongoing, without tangible results members were used to in other places they served. "This is going to look different, even looking at what success looks like," she said. "It's not going to be the same as anything we do." For Smith Knowles, that means leaning heavily on data and looking at what is already successful, working to make things more equitable versus tackling the largest problems first. Quote, "If we're kicking butt in this area, figuring out how this would make this stronger and tighter, as opposed to, quote, you're going to have to change your whole life and whole way of thinking," unquote. It's going to be selling this to 40,000 people, not on this call. She suggested starting a shared Google Doc for commission members to add ideas and assign data collection. City liaison Tony Babcock said she would tackle that assignment. City Administrator Ron Gaines noted he preferred the task force, which is charged with presenting a report to the council by this fall, to put together a structure for upcoming meetings to allow city staff to put together data and reports for recommended areas. Dara noted the executive committee had parsed out 6 focus areas of policing, education, housing, business economic development, healthcare, transportation, and culture entertainment. Commissioner Melissa Heston suggested tackling each one in separate meetings to clarify focus, and the commission agreed to tackle education first, perhaps in June. Meetings so far have strayed from the agenda, and commissioners agreed to have a facilitator lead future meetings. In my experience, facilitators move the conversation along, keep everyone on task, keep everyone glued together, said Commissioner Will Frost. The group also discussed the possible replacement of Diego Hernandez, who was unable to attend the first 2 meetings and likely won't be able to attend others due to his work schedule as a reporter at KWWL, Dara said. Dunn noted she liked his inclusion as a young person and hopes Mayor Rob Green appoints someone of a similar age. Quote, if you have someone you'd like to suggest, let someone or I know and we will pursue that, Dara said. Garden Variety Shakespeare, Waterloo Community Playhouse's outdoor show, has roles to fill. Story by Melody Parker. Waterloo. Love will be in the air when Waterloo Community Playhouse Black Hawk Children's Theater performers return this summer to the Cedar Valley Arboretum and Botanical Center to perform Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream. The romantic, fantastical show will be performed in the Rose Garden at the Arboretum July 28th through August 1st. Shows are at 6:30 p.m. except August 1st at 2 o'clock p.m. And there are roles left to fill, said director Anita Ross. Auditions will be conducted remotely via Zoom or Google Hangouts and are due by Saturday. She also will accept video auditions. Quote, this was the show we were going to do at the Arboretum last summer, but we'd just gotten rehearsals started when the COVID-19 shut us down. We decided to remount the show this year using the same cast as much as possible. About 60 to 65% of the performers are returning to the show, but we have openings if anyone is interested in being involved, Ross said. Rehearsals will begin outdoors in June, following COVID protocols. The Arboretum location is ideal for Shakespeare's comedy about love, Ross said, who performed and taught with the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company. Quote, the gardens are so lovely, it elevates everything automatically and gives audiences a sense that something could happen here, such as being inhabited by fairies who manipulate humans in love in Shakespeare's tale. Such a natural setting will keep stage sets as sparse as possible, Ross explained. There will be a few pieces that we'll pull in to help create settings for each of the scenes, and other than that, we'll have set pieces that are easily moved on and off and used lighting effects to add a layer of magical romanticism that fits the show. Music will also be used to enhance the scenes. Ross is excited about welcoming people back into our space to enjoy what our actors have to offer. I nearly leapt for joy when I heard of the first full belly audience laugh 30 seconds into the recent performance of BHCT's The Imaginators. It's such a wonderful way to feel the love and support from the community, unquote. Anyone interested in auditioning for Midsummer Night's Dream but unable to audition through these methods should email anita.ross@wcpbhct.org. For more information about what to prepare for the audition and roles to be filled, go to www.wcpbhct.org. Hudson School Board suspends, expels student until fall 2022. Story filed by Andrew Wind. Hudson, a student has been suspended for the rest of the school year and expelled for all of the next one by the School Board of Education. The board voted Tuesday to take the actions, which were recommended by the Hudson Community Schools Administration, following a 1.5-hour closed session. Three of the five members participated in the meeting. Superintendent Tony Voss noted the disciplined person is not an elementary student, but declined further comment on specifics about the individual or the incident. He cited District Policy 503.1 as the reason the student was disciplined. The policy notes students can be disciplined for violent and destructive behavior, as well as conduct which disrupts or interferes with education program, school operations, activities, or the rights of others to obtain an education. Voss did acknowledge the incident that precipitated the hearing occurred earlier this month. The fact is that by law, any type of discipline that exceeds 10 days requires board action, he said. On May 1st, 10 days prior to the hearing, Hudson Police received a tip and began investigating a threat against the district that appeared on social media. Voss said at the time that the student would not be in attendance in the district, but some parents with concerns kept their children at home the following Monday. The expelled student would be eligible to return to a district school in the fall of 2022. Quote, they have to meet with the administration prior to their readmittance to the school, said Voss, to reflect on the time away and talk about lessons learned. If the administration feels the student is ready to be readmitted, a recommendation would be sent to the board. The board would meet with the student and make the final decision. Cedar Falls Zoning okays new zoning downtown. We'll head to council on Monday. Story filed by Amy Rivers. Cedar Falls, after several meetings, public comment, and amendments, the city's zoning board Wednesday put its seal of approval on new downtown zoning regulations. The Planning and Zoning Commission unanimously approved rezoning the downtown business district and neighborhoods surrounding it. The new character districts will replace existing zoning designation as well as the central business district overlay if approved by the city council. The council will take up the matter at its Monday meeting, said Planning and Community Services Manager Karen Howard. After the Imagine Downtown Vision Plan was approved in November 2019, hearing from the public on issues such as parking and debating internally on everything from design review committee to vinyl siding, commissioners finally found a plan they liked on Wednesday. Quote, it looks like you changed everything we talked about, said Commissioner Leanne Saul of the amended plan. Howard said the area currently includes C1, C2, and C3 commercial zoning, R2, R3, and R4 residential zoning, industrial zones, and even A1, which is the city-owned sewage plant. Part of the area lies within a special zoning overlay district, meaning proposals in that area must come before zoning commission and adhere to specific requirements. That will change with the new character districts, which will be rezoned to CD through DT, providing specific areas for certain design guidelines and more consistency and clarity to developers, Howard stressed. Quote, it really seems like a good change, said Commissioner Chair Brad Leeper. It's a lot different than what we're doing right now, but we'll adapt as we move forward, unquote. City staff will now work with developers directly, largely bypassing the traditional planning and zoning review process. Developers could appeal a decision to the Board of Adjustment. The Zoning Commission would still rule on matters like zoning changes. Quote, I'm eager to see how it will work in place and how it might affect how we do business moving forward, said Commissioner Amanda Lynch. Quote, I'm kind of excited to see what it looks like, unquote. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, May 14th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Washburn. Michael Paul Bedard, 70, of Washburn, died Wednesday, May 12th, at the Cedar Valley Hospice Home. He was born May 12th, 1951, in Waterloo, the son of Joseph and Agnes Farrell Bedard. He married Diane Christopher on August 4, 1972, at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in LaPorte City. Michael was employed as a professional painter in both commercial and residential. Mass of Christian burial will be 10 a.m. Saturday, May 15th, at Immaculate Conception Catholic Church, with burial in Sancta Maria Cemetery, both in Gilbertville. Public visitation from 4 o'clock to 7 p.m. Friday, May 14th at Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Service on South Street, Waterloo, where there will be a 4 p.m. vigil service. Visitation also 1 hour prior to services Saturday at the church. The Mass will be live streamed on the Immaculate Conception St. Joseph Facebook page. Mask and social distancing will be required. Memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be left at www.haggertywyckoffgrarup.com. Dyke. Justin P. Conan, 85, of Dyke, died Wednesday, May 12th at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital. He was born June 19, 1935, in George, son of Reverend Peter and Jenny Ostendorf Conan. He graduated from Appleton High School. He earned a BA from ISTC, UNI, and later completed his master's from UNI. Justin served in the United States Army from 1954 to 1956. He married Elaine Hates in 1957 at the Appleton Reformed Church. Justin taught industrial arts and technical education in Ottumwa and then at West Waterloo High School for 35 years. He was a member of Westminster Presbyterian Church and former member of Grace Reformed Church, where he served as an elder, taught Sunday school, and sang in the choir. Justin deeply loved his wife and children. He enjoyed building and working with his hands. He truly enjoyed his interaction with neighbors, fellow teachers, and his many students and friends. Funeral service is at 10:30 a.m. Monday, May 17th, at Westminster Presbyterian Church, Waterloo, with burial in Pleasant Valley Cemetery, Appleton. Visitation 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock p.m. Sunday, May 16th, at Locke Funeral Home, Waterloo. Memorials to the family for an Industrial Tech Scholarship or the Northeast Iowa Food Bank. For more info, visit www.lockfuneralhome.com. Independence. Dale R. Barth, 79, of Independence, Iowa, died on May 10, 2021, at the Cedar Valley Hospice House in Waterloo, Iowa. Dale was born on April 13, 1942, in Independence, Iowa, the son of Winfield and Lula, maiden name Hammond, Barth. He graduated from the Independence High School in 1960 and joined the United States Navy later that year. He served proudly on the USS Saratoga until he was honorably discharged in 1964. He married Judith F. Paget in 1964. They made their home together in Waterloo, Iowa, where Dale worked for John Deere for several years. Their family moved to Greenville, South Carolina in 1970, where he worked for the Wonder Weave Company, before moving back to Iowa in 1974. They moved to Independence, Iowa, to raise their children. Dale worked at Corn Blossoms for many years. Dale and Judith moved back to South Carolina in 1987, and they later divorced in 1991. He worked for the Pinkerton Security Company for 20 years, and he retired in 2017. A private family celebration of life will be held at a later date. The Reif Family Center Funeral Home and Crematory is assisting the family with arrangements. To leave an online condolence, please go to www.reiffamilycenter.com under obituaries. Paul Willard Bud Mielhau, 97, passed away Thursday, May 13, 2021, at Shellsburg Farm, surrounded by family. Paul was born on February 19, 1924, the son of Paul Mielhau Sr. and Frieda Fruher, maiden name Shingleman, in a farmhouse near Shady Grove, Iowa. Paul married Evelyn Eleanor McDermott Andorf on December 5, 1953, in Waterloo. She was the love of his life. Paul attended Vinton High School, where he was a Golden Gloves boxer. After graduation, he went to work at Rath Packing Company in Waterloo. He enlisted in the U.S. Marine Corps in 1943. On June 15, 1944, Paul was part of the beachhead invasion of Saipan. On July 9, 1944, Paul was wounded after being on the island of Saipan for 35 days. On October 5, 1945, Paul was discharged from the U.S. Marine Corps and received a Purple Heart. Paul began farming with his father and brother Louis in 1948 after purchasing a 650-acre farm southwest of Rowley, Iowa. In 1969, Paul bought and moved his family to an additional 360-acre farm north of Shellsburg. In 1980, Paul and Evelyn retired to Shellsburg, where they were owners of the Potpourri Antique Shop and later converted it to Tasty Freeze. They retired and moved to Waterloo in 1987, where they continued their travels to Europe, Egypt, and Russia. During their travels in Ireland, Paul refused to kiss the Blarney Stone, stating he was more German than Irish. In his later years, Paul enjoyed helping his son Jean on the Shellsburg farm, packaging tiny but mighty popcorn. Paul cared deeply for his family and enjoyed being surrounded by his children and grandchildren. He was well known at the Isle of Capri and shared many stories about his winnings. But for Paul, the greatest winnings in his life were his wife and family. Services will be 10:30 a.m. Monday, May 17th at Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Service on West Ridgeway, with burial in Mount Olivet Cemetery, both in Waterloo. Full military rites will be conducted by American Legion Post 138 and VFW Post 1623, with flag presentation by Marine Corps Funeral Honors. Public visitation will be from 4 o'clock until 7 o'clock p.m. Sunday, May 17th at the funeral home on West Ridgeway, and continue for 1 hour before services on Monday. Memorials directed to Cedar Valley Hospice or the family. Online condolences may be left at www.haggertywyckoffgrarup.com. Waterloo. Carmen R. Quigley, 77, of Waterloo, died on Wednesday, May 12, 2021, from lung cancer. Carmen was born on November 14, 1943, in Olwine, daughter of Harry and Irene, maiden name Frank, Wilson. She attended high school in Olwine. Carmen married Lyle Schumann in 1970. They later divorced. She married Patrick Quigley on July 24, 1994, in Waterloo. He preceded her in death on April 5, 2010. Over the years, she had been the owner and operator of Jerome's Bakery, tended bar at the Jet Tavern and Moose Lodge, worked at Hinson's Manufacturing, and retired in 1999 from Aramac. Carmen was known for her feisty personality and for speaking her mind. Everyone loved Carmen because of her great humor, courage, care for others, and lovable, sassy personality. She was the anchor of her family and loved everyone unconditionally. If you were lucky enough to be part of her life, she considered you family. She had a zest for life and loved her family deeply. In her free time, she enjoyed reading, crocheting, camping, card games, bowling, and visiting parks to watch wildlife. Carmen was a fantastic cook. Memorials may be directed to the family. Funeral services are 10 o'clock a.m. on Monday, May 17, 2021, at Kern's Funeral Service. Visitation is 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock p.m. on Sunday, May 16, 2021, at Kern's. Burial will be at Garden of Memories Cemetery. You may contact www.kernsfuneralservice.com for more information. Waterloo. Jeanette C. Dolan, 86, of Waterloo, died Wednesday, May 12th at Cedar Valley Hospice Home. Services will be 11 o'clock a.m. Tuesday, May 18th at Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church, with burial in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday at Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Service on South Street. Their phone number is 234-6274, where there will be a 4 o'clock p.m. rosary. Visitation will continue at the church for an hour before services on Tuesday. Memorials may be directed to Cedar Valley Hospice or the family. Condolences may be left with www.haggertywyckoffgrarup.com. Waterloo. Emil Henry Smid, 92, of Waterloo, died Wednesday, May 12th at his daughter Luann's home in Waterloo. Mass of Christian burial will be 11 o'clock a.m. Monday, May 17th, at Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church, with burial in Garden of Memories Cemetery. full military rites will be conducted by the Evansdale Amvets Post 31, assisted by the Marine Corps Honor Guard. Public visitation from 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday at Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Service on South Street. Visitation also 1 hour prior to services Monday at the church. Mask and social distancing will be required. Memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be left at www.haggertywyckoffgrarup.com. Lauren Dave Parker. Dave passed away on May 11th, his 69th birthday, following a battle with cancer. There will be a celebration of life on Saturday, May 15th, from 1 to 3 o'clock at the Half Pint Saloon. He is survived by his wife, Barb. And now we turn back to local news. In Metro Briefs, memorial bike ride planned, Cedar Falls. The 19th annual Ride of Silence Remembrance for bicyclists who were killed or injured while cycling will be at 6 p.m. May 19th. The ride will start at Overman Park. The route will be 8.5 miles long, and the pace will be moderate. Helmets are required. For more information, email roger@ridecvc.org. Youth Reading Program Set, Cedar Falls. The Cedar Falls Public Library will light up the atrium at night all summer to spread awareness about its youth summer reading program. This year's theme is Reading Colors Your World. The library is challenging youth to read 15 to 20 minutes a day. For every 15 minutes they read, kids earn one free book. They can complete activities to earn virtual badges and tickets. Church reopens food pantry, Waterloo. The Apostolic Pentecostal Church at 1645 Downing Avenue will reopen its food pantry from 1 to 2 p.m. May 22nd. Call Darlene at area code 319-231-0856 for more information or to pre-register. Man convicted of 1983 ambush killing in Waterloo dies in prison, filed by Jeff Reinitz. Waterloo. A Waterloo man who was serving time for killing a public defender in 1983 has died in prison. Ronald Harris Brown died around 9:35 a.m. Wednesday following complications from an apparent suicide attempt, according to the Iowa Department of Corrections. He was 80. The death is under investigation, which is standard practice for all suspected suicides. Brown had been serving a life sentence at the Clarinda Correctional Facility for his first-degree murder killing Assistant Public Defender Alvin Davidson on January 10, 1983. Davidson, 41, had been involved in a shootout with his brother-in-law, Jan Hollins, a year earlier, an incident that left Davidson in a leg cast and Hollins facing an attempted murder charge. With Hollins's trial approaching, Brown and others planned to kill the state's main witness, Davidson. Brown, who had served prison time with Jan Hollins years earlier, was tapped to be the gunman, according to Courier Archives. The plot unfolded shortly after 5 p.m. January 10, 1983, the day before the trial, when Davidson was dropped off at the Russell Lamson building where he was living. As Davidson steered his crutches toward the sidewalk, Brown popped out of an alley, firing a shotgun, striking Davidson in the neck and torso. Brown was later detained in Arizona, where he had been living. The trial lasted 6 weeks with 130 witnesses and involved a Dubuque County jury that was bused to Waterloo to hear testimony. Brown was convicted of murder, and Hollins's brother, J. Willison Hollins, was convicted for helping plan the crime. He is currently being housed in a prison out of state, according to corrections officials. Three arrested following drug search in rural Waterloo, filed by Jeff Reinitz. Waterloo. Three people have been arrested after a search found methamphetamine and other drugs at a rural Waterloo home Wednesday. Scott Gilstrep, 36, Tirza Schubarth, 37, and Melissa Beck, 38, were arrested for possession of meth with intent to deliver, possession of marijuana, and two counts of child endangerment, according to Blackhawk County Sheriff's Office. Gilstrep and Schubarth were also arrested for possession of cocaine. EPA stops Trump clean air rollback. Ditching rule will make it easier to enact limits on emissions. Filed by Matthew Daly of the Associated Press, Washington. The Environmental Protection Agency is revoking a Trump-era rule that overhauled how the agency evaluates air pollutants, a move the Biden administration says will make it easier to enact limits on dangerous and climate-changing emissions. EPA said Thursday it reviewed a rule issued by the Trump administration last year and found that it imposed procedural restrictions and other requirements that would have limited EPA's ability to use the best available science in developing regulations under the Clean Air Act. Quote, EPA has critical authority under the Clean Air Act to protect the public from harmful air pollution, among other threats to our health. Revoking this unnecessary and misguided rule by the Trump administration is proof positive of the Biden administration's commitment to science, EPA Administrator Michael Regan said in a statement. The action on the so-called benefit-cost rule follows an executive order Biden signed on his first day in office, directing EPA to review all regulations and policies undertaken by the previous administration. The review concluded that the Trump-era rule should be rescinded. Environmental and public health groups hailed the rule change as a return to EPA's responsibility to prioritize public health. Turning now to the sports page, in prep track and field 2A boys state qualifier, Lainau draws a line in the throws, Denver wins a team title. Filed by Nick Petteros, Jessup. A series of numbers marked out onto cardboard squares line the right edge of the discus sectors in the field along the parking lot at Jessup High School. The furthest sign of 160 feet might as well have been named the Lainau line during Thursday's state qualifying meet. Jessup's Carson Lainau surpassed 163 feet on half of his attempts and improved upon his Class 2A leading mark with a throw of 165 and 11 inches on the first attempt of the final round. Lainau then overcame a slow start in the shot put by finding the edge of the gravel and grass twice in the finals with a pair of marks over 52 feet, including a championship 52 and 9 inches. Quote, I've put in a lot of hard work, and to come out here today, three discus throws past 160, it felt really good, Lainau said. Quote, it added to the experience having a lot of people that I know there, and I've thrown that ring thousands of times, so it was an advantage to me, unquote. Next week's state appearance will be the first for Lainau and many Iowans following last spring's pandemic-canceled season. The Jessup junior wasted no time putting everything together in the discus. He had a practice throw near 165, and the lefty spun and delivered a 163 and 7 inches opening mark with a loud grunt on his first attempt at the competition. During the shot put, Lainau channeled that grunt again in the finals for his first of two 52-plus feet attempts. His top shot put mark this season ranks second in 2A. Quote, I was a little frustrated, so I thought the grunt would add some extra power there, he said. During the break from the competition last spring, Carson trained with his older brother, Tyler, a junior college transfer to the University of Iowa throws program. The eldest, Lainau, helped his brother with the technique, lifting, and a nutritional plan to put himself in position to contend for a pair of state titles next week. Quote, I really trained with my brother every day, coming up here and throwing sometimes twice a day, Carson Lainau recalls. He knows a lot more than I do. It was a really good experience that has helped me out, unquote. Cyclones clear hurdles. Denver's Andrew Cruz is another athlete who contributed to push himself through the lengthy wait to return to competition. His state debut will finally arrive as a senior competing in multiple events. Cruz anchored the Cyclones championship shuttle hurdle relay team of Casey Wirtjes, Evan Dorn, and Alex Larson in 1 3.09. He then beat Crestwood's Cole Henry to the finish line in the 110-meter high hurdles in 15.86. Those efforts were lone event wins for a deep Denver team that captured the district championship by 11 points over Waukon with a score of 106. Quote, "We've worked hard all season," Cruz said, addressing his shuttle hurdle relay team's personal record. "We haven't run our best times, so we knew we could come in and do some damage. We dropped our time a little and got ourselves into a pretty comfortable spot at the state," unquote. Kraus pointed toward the meet's 45-minute break as a time his team used to its advantage to get some hurdle work in and focus. He kept that drive into the high hurdles with his high motor complementing solid technique throughout the race. Quote, "I just had to run my own race, not worry about anyone next to me, and just do my best," Kraus said. Quote, "I had a decent start, decent finish, and a pretty good time. I had my junior season taken away, so it means a lot to go to state in both of the races I love." Jayhawks relays click. Jessup's Nolan Evans sacrificed an opportunity to compete in the state 3,200 for a chance to be part of a qualifying 4x800 relay. That decision paid off Thursday. Evans took the baton from Brady Dahl and provided separation from Denver in a race between conference rivals that entered with seed time separated by just 0.04 of a second. Evans then cheered on Aiden Gonzalez as he fended off a strong challenge, and anchor Kyle Rodinghouse found more separation, and Jessup won the 4x800 by 6 seconds in a time of 8:30.46. Evans also anchored a state qualifying distance medley and was second in the 1,600 to qualify for state. Quote, "Being out there with friends, running an event like that is going to be awesome," he said, assessing the relay opportunity next week in Des Moines. "The adrenaline and everything, the fans should be a great race. We're trying to place," unquote. Speedy Van Engelenberg, Sumner Fredericksburg sprinter Cody Van Engelenberg, showcased impressive range, winning the Open 100 and 400. He was second to Cascade's Jack Menster by 1/100 of a second in the 200. Spohr savors the moment. Union freshman Sam Spohr found support from the large Jessup crowd as he powered his way to state in the wheelchair 400, 200, and 100. His pace was steady throughout the races. After crossing the finish line, Spohr thanked the track fans with a wave and a big smile following each event. In girls' prep track and field, 2A girls' state qualifier. Girls' 2A state qualifier, Trip Tau's four event titles lead Jessup, filed by Nick Pederos, and begins with a photograph of Jessup's Amanda Treptow. Jessup, "Sometimes you don't realize what's important until it's taken away." Such was the case for Union of LaPorte City's Ellie Rath. The young distance runner took in the atmosphere at the state track and field meet as an alternate on a qualifying relay her freshman season. 2 years later, after last spring's competitions were canceled due to COVID-19 pandemic, Rath finally became a state qualifier. She crossed a long-awaited goal off her list early during Thursday's qualifying meet at Jessup, setting a pace that only she could maintain during a convincing 3,000-meter victory in 10 minutes, 42.2 seconds. Quote, "When I didn't get that chance last season to compete, it just made me want it even more, and I worked even harder," said Rath, who finished just 1 second back of her 3,000 personal best time that ranks second among 2A runners this season. "I'm thankful for that because it made me better," unquote. Competing in front of fans that filled the bleachers and lined the fence outside the track, Rath said she could tell the separation she had from the field by listening to the gap in cheers. She's ready to lay it all on the line against the state's best next week in Des Moines. Expect Rath to push them early. Quote, "I definitely try to start the pace strong, and I know that at the end, I'm not much of a sprinter," Rath admits. If it came down to neck and neck in the last lap, Chances are not really good that I could make it. I like to get my speed up around laps 2, 3, and 4. Treptow wins 4. Amanda Treptow is one of the few athletes making a return trip to Des Moines with state track and field experience. A 3-event qualifier as a freshman, Treptow was part of 4 event wins Thursday on her home track. The junior standout distance runner stuck to her plan of going out strong and setting the pace. She was strong enough to pull away from Union's Wrath on the final curve, with her 4th event win coming in the 1500. Treptow's finishing time of 5:01.37 was faster than all but one of Iowa's 2A runners entering Thursday. Quote, "It's really special and exciting to be on our home track and have Jessup supporting me here is really fun," Treptow said. "To have the crowd cheering on your back kind of helps you push through all the races. Hopefully it's the same as at state," unquote. Treptow anchored a championship 4x800 relay of Claire Wright, Alexis Vanderwerf, and Natalie O'Connor in 10:01.91. Alexis Larson, Vanderwerf, and Mallory Becker each ran personal bests to give Treptow a lead in the distance medley she anchored for a 4:23.59 time. Treptow won the open 800 in 2:26.09. "We're really supportive of each other, and we love to run. It's really easy to push through," Treptow said, assessing her anchor role. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Friday, May 14th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And you may wish to stay tuned to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, which follows shortly. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.